Good morning. I greet you in the name of Jesus this morning. I'm thankful that I'm here with you all again. It's good to be back home. And the last couple of weeks have been pretty intense for me as far as preaching. And at school board meeting, I mentioned something about whose turn it would be to preach, and I'm thankful for a brotherhood that God can speak through. And the suggestion was that, you know, you've got all these sermons ready, why don't you just preach one of them? And you know, I chose to do that partly because of that nudge, and partly because there's a sermon that I shared at Kirkwood that I don't think I've ever preached on here at Darbin, and I felt a little embarrassed about that. So anyway, this morning, I'm going to take one of the messages that I preached there and bring it to you all in case you haven't listened to those messages. I hope you haven't. I will warn you that this message at Kirkwood took me 78 minutes. So I don't know if I can condense it any tighter than that or not. Turn with me to Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11, I want to just read verses 1 through 9. Genesis 11, 1, "And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, Go to, let us make brick and burn them throughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, Go to, let us build a city, and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And the Lord said, Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. Therefore is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth, and from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon the face of all the earth." I want to read another verse in Judges chapter 1 by way of introduction to this message. Judges chapter 1, verse 28. The context of this is the children of Israel coming into the land of Canaan, and they were told to drive out all the inhabitants, and they chose not to do that. And verse 28 tells us why they didn't do it. "It came to pass," this is Judges 1, 28, "and it came to pass when Israel was strong that they put the Canaanites to tribute and did not utterly drive them out." Now, these two passages introduce this subject that I want to talk about, and that is the issue of modern technology. And the title that I gave the message is Modern Technology Dangers. There are dangers that go along with the day and age in which we live. What do these two passages have to do with each other, and what do they have to do with technology? Well, the passages don't necessarily have anything to do with each other, but the first passage has to do with the human desire to be powerful and in control. They wanted a tower. They wanted to have this place where they could all get together. They were going to build it to heaven. And I don't know what all they could have accomplished. But God, in his understanding of humans, he said, we're going to stop this. And he did a very good job of it. And today, we don't have any society where all the language is one. And language barriers are one of the greatest barriers to cross. You can fly across country barriers very easily. But to actually get into a country and communicate with someone and don't know the language is very difficult to do. The second passage has to do with the human tendency to leverage a situation in our favor. See, it was probably easier for the Israelites to go ahead and make slaves out of these people and collect taxes and get labor from them instead of going in there and in cold blood just killing them all off. I tend to think it would be easier to do that, and I think they thought the same thing. And it haunted them for the rest of their lives. This one choice haunted them. They probably looked back and wished that they would have. But all through the book of Judges, they had issues because they didn't do this. Because they did do this, because they put them to tribute. Well, what is technology? Technology, if you were to look it up in the dictionary, you would come across definitions something like this: the science or study of the practical or industrial arts, applied sciences, etc. Second definition, the terms used in a science, such as technical terminology, a method or a process for handling a specific technical problem, and the system by which a society provides its members with those things needed or desired. So technology is very broad. I'm using technology right now to broadcast my voice to you all. You're experiencing the benefits of technology because of electric lights. Some of you are taking notes with the technology of ballpoint pens. Okay, technology is a huge subject, and so we're going to zero in way down to one little specific, only it's big, issue, and that is the whole issue of communications technology, and that includes the internet and phones, and mostly internet, because everything is heading toward internet. All communications are being done via internet, or that's the trend. And so that's what we're going to talk about. I came across a quote in the studies that he said, technology is neither good nor bad, nor is it neutral. And I like that because, for one thing, it's not a Mennonite that said it. And for another thing, is he makes the point that it will go one direction or another. It's not necessarily good or bad, but it will go somewhere. It's not neutral. It will either go good or it will go bad. And I think we need to get a hold of that. And we need to be real with it. If you were to try to look at the history of communications technology, I don't know how far back you would go, but when you think about communicating with each other, you would go all the way back to about 1452 to the man, Gutenberg, who invented the printing press. And you know there were philosophers of the day that saw books being made and they lamented the fact that books are being made because now people won't have to remember anything. You can always consult a book. Well, that argument sounds pretty familiar. You don't have to know anything. You just go to Google. It's true. And they were right too, in a way, because the more you have written down, the more you don't have to remember it. But anyway, that was in 1452, a long time ago. Well, there's not major increases in technology and communications until we get to somewhere in the 1830s, 1840s, where the telegraph was invented and Samuel Morse invented the code that could be used. The next big jump was the actual telephone, where you could transmit voice signals, and that's attributed to Alexander Graham Bell. Probably there were other people involved in that when you look at it. But anyway, that was in the 1870s. And then I'm going to jump another big step into the 1930s, which was the first programmable computer. And then in the 70s, 1974 to 77, somewhere in there, Apple and Microsoft made an IBM, came out with these what they call personal computers, PCs, still call them PCs. And then 1991, Tim Berners-Lee, I believe is his name, invented the internet as we know it, using the HTTP and WWW protocols to retrieve and send files between computers. That's in 1991. From 1936 to 1991, if you do math really quick in your head, is how many years? 55 years. 55 years we go from a computer that's programmable to being able to have computers talk to each other all around the world via what we call the internet. Now, internet itself has its own timeline. We go from 1991, and the way to access internet was probably through some phone line with what we call dial-up modems. And it would sit there and take, what, 10, 15 seconds at the very best, perhaps several minutes to connect. And then the speeds were so slow, the best you could hope for was maybe 56 kilobytes per second. It's probably the best. And then in a couple of years, we come into cable, Wi-Fi, and then we have cell phone networks, starting with the 3G, which was pretty good, 4G, LTE, 5G, and things just get faster and faster and faster. Now we're very unhappy if we have slow internet. Internet speeds are now fast enough that your browser is probably what slows it down, not the internet speed. And I'm going to suggest right now that the difference between no internet and dial-up internet to dial-up to high-speed internet, the difference between dial-up to high-speed is bigger than no internet to dial-up internet. Just want you to think about that because of what all it means. Well, one of the other things that happens in the whole computer timeline is the size of the devices. The backbone of computing, the very basics, there's a lot more to it, but the very basic thing of computing is the on-off switch in a transistor. And a transistor started out about the size of the palm of your hand, which is about 4 inches by 4 inches for me. And it was about the depth of 2 matchboxes, so something like so. Pretty good little size thing. And that was one transistor. Now, I didn't bring my phone into the pulpit with me, but all of you that have smartphones, you are carrying around somewhere between 2 to 4 billion transistors in that phone. I said billion. 2 to 4 billion. Now, if you would take those transistors and put them to the size of the original transistor, you would cover somewhere between 5 to 6,000 acres. You're carrying that much in a phone. It's phenomenal. And that all happened in less than 100 years. A lot of it happened in my lifetime. I'm only 33. A lot of it happened in my lifetime. I remember my mom and dad's first cell phone, and it was big. And it only did phone calls, and it did text. And I think it had a game on it called Snake. And that was a cell phone. Y'all remember those phones, right? You know, that game was pretty popular. But anyway, the internet is, of course, the biggest thing ever, I think. Because it gives us power to share all kinds of things, and it does it digitally. You don't have to carry papers around. And that's why the world is moving more and more toward internet. It is handy. Very, very convenient. Phones are convenient. And that's why they're so popular, because they ease a lot of the problems in life. But, as I said before, the difference between dial-up and no internet is not as big as high speed to dial-up, because when we move from, well, think about the original dial-up. It was slow, it took forever, and you only did it if you absolutely had to. You didn't probably download a lot of movies, you didn't download a lot of pictures. You were glad when you got to an HTML site that was largely text, because it would render it quickly, and you didn't have to sit and wait for scripts and all of that to load. Well, now with the speeds that we have, those aren't an issue. And you can download, actually you don't need to download, you can stream music and videos and stuff like that. You don't even have to wait for it to download. And the other thing about the internet nowadays is that it is always on. You don't have to consciously take your phone and connect it to a network. It's just always there whether you need it or not. And then suddenly, since it's there, we realize how much we need it. One disclaimer that I should give you all, and that is that I do not believe that I have attained to the ideal in technology usage. In fact, in some ways, It's probably a little hypocritical for me to say some of the things that I'm going to say, but it is the ideal. And I want us to think about if we can get there together and personally. But since these things are smaller and faster, they're always on, our lives have become a vortex of texts, phone calls, emails, WhatsApps, Snapchats, tweets, likes, posts, friending and unfriending, and you name it. And that's life for people. Hopefully we don't have all of that, but maybe we do. Just some numbers, if you like numbers and statistics, to give you an idea of how big the internet really is. I want to give you some numbers to chew on. This is from 2017, and this is every minute of every day. Every minute of every day. Netflix users streamed 69,444 hours of video every minute, every day. How many users does it take to do that? A lot. Well, that's not all. Snapchat users shared 527,760 photos. That's 500,000 photos every minute. LinkedIn gained 120 plus new professionals. YouTube watchers watched 4,146,400 videos. Twitter users sent 456,000 tweets. 15,220,770 texts were sent. Skype users made 154,200 phone calls or Skype calls. Instagram users posted 46,740 photos. Americans used 2,657,700 gigabytes of data every minute. Spotify added 13 new songs. Google conducted 3,607,080 searches every minute. And so suddenly you are in a world that is always on and always getting information, whether it's good or whether it's bad. It's there, and we contributed to these numbers. Anytime you opened Google and typed in, what's the weather today, you were part of those several million searches. And that's not all. Those are just some platforms. There's others out there. I got tired of writing them down. Well, we are what we call plain people. And we believe in separating ourselves from the world. The world is alarmed. Modern psychologists, sociologists, these type of people that study human behavior, they are scared about modern technology. And we should be too. We are not wise enough to overcome all of this just because we are Christians. I want you to get a hold of that. Just because you're a Christian and I'm a Christian does not mean we're smart enough to outsmart modern technology. And these are the things they're alarmed about. For one thing, they're alarmed about what they call addiction to cell phones. They've studied this thing and they've conducted tests. And I believe I'm right on all of this, that the chemicals that are released in your brain when you're running your cell phone and when you get new messages are the same chemicals that are released through tobacco and alcohol use. So, I guess we need to be real with this. And it's the reason people, if you're feeling depressed, that one of the ways to deal with that is to send a message to about 10 of your friends and hope that somebody replies so that you get that little high. This is real life. This is why people live the way they do. And unfortunately, I think we might live that way. And that's really bad. There was a group of students who were asked to give up their cell phones for one whole day. And they didn't know what to do with themselves. They were just almost at sea. They didn't know how to function. This is scary to think that a phone would become an extension of yourself. Some of the other things that they're concerned about is isolation, social isolation, which is really odd because there's never been a time that we've been able to communicate with more people at one time. And yet we're finding social isolation to be a reality. Why is that? Well, the reason for that is because we do not have normal, when I say we, I'm talking about humans. I hope that this isn't true for us. But again, just because you're a Christian doesn't mean you're exempt from this. I want you to get a hold of that too. And so, social isolation happens when we withdraw from normal human interaction. See, it is normal to talk to someone face to face. That's human interaction, and that's real social interaction. Having a text conversation feels like the same thing, but it is not real human interaction. And so if all your communications are with people through digital media, you are not really learning how to communicate. All you're learning how to do is type words. But did you ever think about how much of our communication depends on the look on someone's face, their body language? It's up to 2/3 of our communication is nonverbal. And so if you take that out of the equation, suddenly people don't know how to read each other. And so if you get two people together that they've spent their entire lives, and the only way they know how to communicate is through Facebook, when they finally meet, they probably won't know how to talk to each other. They'll have to go back to Facebook. And maybe that's why you see people going to a restaurant, sitting across the table from each other with their phones out. Maybe that's the only way they know how to communicate. It always strikes me as very strange that people would do that. But you don't have to go around very far to see that. It used to be that whenever you rode on an airplane, for instance, there was nothing to do besides talk to the person next to you, or sleep, or read a book. The flights I've been on lately, everybody, including myself, we have a little device and we can put earbuds in and we can isolate ourselves from real human interaction. We can listen to whatever, music, stories, sermons, possibly good things. But nobody talks to each other. And we don't even know how. What would you say anyway? Well, what did they talk about a couple years ago before these phones were so popular? I don't know. But anyway, one of the other things that people are concerned about is the whole issue of depression. Because we have a lack of true social exchange, you know, there's something, even for people who are not what we would call social butterflies or extroverted people, there's still something healthy and encouraging about talking to other people, even if you don't think that that's your cup of tea. So we have depression, and along with the lack of social exchange, there's laziness because everybody wants to sit and watch Netflix instead. And along with the laziness, of course, is a lack of exercise. And so you take those three things together and you have a spike in depression. People just get depressed, and suicide rates are going up. And when people study this, the only common thing that they can find to make suicide rates climb in these certain age brackets, mostly young people, is the commonality of a lot of social interaction, a lot of cell phone usage. Another big concern is poor sleep habits. People that are always on, always in front of their devices. There's two things that work against sleep. One is the constant stimulation, because you're always interacting, sort of, with somebody. The light that is emitted from screens affects the chemistry of the brain. There's a blue light. I don't understand it completely, but it has something to do, again, with the chemicals in your brain. And if you have your phone by your bed and you look at it and then try to go to sleep, it's going to take you at least half an hour to unwind. And so studies are recommending that you should at least have half an hour to 45 minutes at least of no screen time before you go to bed if you want to sleep well. So anyway, share that for whatever it's worth. Another thing that's out of control, people are very concerned about, is cyberbullying. You see, there's something that happens reality has changed to be whatever I want it to be online. And the other thing that happens is that I'm insulated from the consequences of my actions. I can bully somebody if I'm not afraid that they'll turn on me. And so you see this happening all the time. People online, they'll troll. They'll just go out there and try to make inflammatory comments, and they will make awful statements about other people on public forums. And all of this, of course, contributes to the suicide rates as well. But the cyberbullying, the warped reality, the hypocrisy is another issue. People create who they want to be online. And if you insulate yourself from people who actually see you in real life, and all you are is the online presence, you're not being real with who you are. And that's one reason, just, I could never understand why these dating websites get so much attention. Because you do not know who you're talking to anyway. You could steal a picture and use that. You don't even know if it's the real person. And it's one of the latest scams too, is to go on these sites and get people to send you money for plane tickets to meet and then walk off with the money. But anyway, that's just one example of the whole hypocrisy. Another thing that's huge is the sexual boundaries are easily overstepped. There's no question that the use of pornography and other forms of sexual exchange has spiked since the use of the internet. There's no question about that. It's so easy to do. And the other thing is, you can hide. You don't have to face the consequences of wrong actions. You actually do, but the deceit or the deception of the devil is that you don't. Another thing that's concerning these people that study it, and it should concern us as well, is the attention spans are shrinking. It is harder and harder to get people to sit and read a book because books don't have good graphics, they don't make noises, and they're just boring. It takes concentrated effort to read a book. Whereas if you just have, especially video media, can really feed that. Although, in my research on this, people are complaining that even YouTube videos are hard to keep people's attention. About 3 minutes. If you really want to get something across in a YouTube video, you need to get it done in 3 minutes. Anything longer than that, their minds are going to wander. 3 minutes isn't very long. Can you concentrate for 3 minutes? Try it sometime. Well, what does the Bible say about technology? Does the Bible say anything about technology? I have a whole bunch of passages to look at, of principles that I believe we should learn and we should learn to obey. And I'm not sure if we'll take the time to look at all of them. I guess we probably should. Because I feel like as I look through my Bible and just, what are principles that we can use? I came across Matthew 7, verses 13 and 14. Turn with me there. Matthew 7, 13 and 14. Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. Now, I'm going to have to make a loophole for us, because we as a group have chosen to put the Canaanites to tribute. We said internet's okay, but we're going to use it right. That's what we've said. And so I can't say that the internet's the wide gate, can I? Because then that condemns all of us. But what I am going to suggest is that there's an awful lot that is out there and is available in the form of websites and apps that we do not need. I am puzzled at myself and other people. Why do we need 5 different apps that do exactly the same thing? Why? We have text. The phone comes with a text app. You can text right there. But no, we need another one called WhatsApp. And then we need another one called Telegram. And then we need another one called you name it. And they all do exactly the same thing. I think it's time for us to understand that straight is the gate and narrow is the way. And that we do not have to have everything. It's just going to load us down with more freight than we need to carry. It's a burden. Hebrews tells us that the word to lay aside the sin and the weight that does so easily beset us. And if anything happens in technology, turn with me to Matthew 13, my next principle. Matthew 13, verse 22. The context of this is Jesus explaining the parable of the soils that he told. And he says in verse 22, "He also that received seed among the thorns is he that heareth the word, and the care of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and he becometh unfruitful." And so I'm suggesting that technology, modern technology in the form of internet and phones, is something. I don't know if it's the care of the world. I don't know if it's the deceitfulness of riches. Maybe it's both. But it has the potential to choke out good things with inferior things. I'm not going to say bad things because I want to trust everybody is using their devices properly. But just stuff, just unnecessary junk that you really could live without. And I'm talking to myself. I don't know why it's so easy to fall into these traps. Unless, of course, it is indeed a tool that the devil is using against us. Well, another principle in Matthew 18. I'm going to suggest this morning that the Bible is full of principles about modern technology communications if we would just look for them and commit to obeying them. Because when I looked through this, I used letters to keep track of it. And I have all the way down to the letter S, and I skip some verses on purpose. So that just gives you an idea of how many principles I feel apply to the issue of technology as we know it today. Anyway, in Matthew 18, verse 7, "Woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come, but woe to man by whom the offense cometh. Wherefore, if thy hand or thy foot offend thee, cut them off and cast them from thee, for it is better for thee to enter into life halt or maimed, rather than having 2 hands or 2 feet to be cast into everlasting fire. And if thine eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. It is better for thee to enter into life with 1 eye, rather than having 2 eyes to be cast into hell fire." This is pretty self-explanatory, but I want us to get a grip on this, that if we are finding ourselves repeatedly snared in the area of our internet usage or our smartphone usage, it would be better to get rid of it and be the oddball than to go to hell. I think we know that's true, but it's difficult to believe that that's true. And yeah, what other thing one of the verses that I did not write down that comes to my mind right now is the verse in Romans that talks about making no provision for the flesh. I believe that means that we should make no provision for the flesh. And if we know that that thing's causing us a temptation, we might can get on top of it for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, but we know that it's there, and when we're weak, we go back and we pick it up and we play with it, and then we say, no, we're going to put it down. I don't know what to do with that. I don't believe that that's victorious Christian living. Turn with me to Romans chapter 1 for another principle. Romans 1 is a description of people who forget God, and they are bad people. They have a lot of problems. And in verse 32, Paul wraps this up by saying, who, talking about these people, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. And I think the last phrase of this verse is a principle that we can apply to why we should probably never, ever allow ourselves to watch movies. Because I don't know of any movies that would not include glorifying some sin, whether it's adultery, violence of some kind, bad words. I don't know. And I believe this verse is telling us that maybe we hold ourselves back from actually committing certain things, but it sure is fun to watch other people do it. I think this verse teaches us that we are under the same condemnation. We are taking pleasure in sin even though we wouldn't do it. And that's just as wrong as actually doing the sin. Romans 6, verse 13, another principle. Neither yield ye your members as instruments of unrighteousness unto sin, but yield yourselves unto God as those that are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. That's pretty self-explanatory. All of our bodies, all that we do, our brains, everything, needs to be yielded to God as instruments of righteousness. What righteousness can God accomplish through me and my members? That's the principle. Romans chapter 12, verse 2, another self-explanatory one. Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. First Corinthians chapter 3, verse 17. If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy, for the temple of God is holy, which temple ye are. And there's other verses in 1 Corinthians throughout the Bible that talk about us being the temple of God. And if we defile it with anything, this verse tells us that we will be destroyed. Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 and 8. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Very simple verses. Again, starting out with the words, be not deceived. There are so many things that make us believe or to think that God is going to let us get away with it. He will not. He might for a time, and in fact, we know that he will for a time. He's a very merciful God. I'm not sure why he let so much evil go. But someday, every single one of us is going to be called into account, and I'm going to suggest that it isn't going to be as far away as we think, and that's not because I think that the Lord is going to send Jesus back so soon. He probably will, but we will reap something. We just cannot escape the consequences of our decisions. It's impossible. Once we decide to do something, there will be consequences. Maybe nobody will ever find out, but you will have to live with some consequences. And they're not fun. They're not going to be fun. Where are we? Ephesians chapter 5. Verse 15. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Circumspectly just means carefully, paying attention to what you are doing because every step you take matters. It kind of goes along with the whole thing of sowing and reaping. And this is very good for us today when we think about the technology that surrounds us. We need to be very careful with what we do. It's a very dangerous tool that we have in our hands. It can be used for good, but it can be used as evil. And one of the things that I want us to get to in verse 15 is that we're not to be as fools. And I just want to reiterate again that if we think that somehow we are exempt from the problems that are out there, we are fools. We are not exempt from the issues that come with that. Let's be wise and remember to walk carefully and to redeem the time. How much time have we wasted on our devices? Just maybe a good exercise, if you feel like maybe this is an issue for you, is to keep a log of all the times you pick up your phone and what you did with it in the last 10 minutes. Just write down what you did and think about all of the things that are completely unnecessary. And again, I can't claim that I've conquered this. It's embarrassing, but it's true. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. By the way, if y'all are keeping notes, and I told you I got to the letter S, I'm going to confess that I skipped one. I skipped over one. And I did it on purpose, but I also had a reference written down for the armor of God. I think we need to take on the armor of God. That's Ephesians 6. So if you're keeping notes and you want to look that up, go ahead. But I wanted to move along here and not take 78 minutes this morning. Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. Very familiar verse. Whatsoever things are true, honest, just, pure, lovely, good report. If there's any virtue, if there's any praise, think on these things. Think about how many things in the last browsing session that you've had on the internet that did not fit these categories. I dare say every news article you read doesn't fit this. It's not true. At least it starts to look like everything you read isn't true. Rarely is it of good report. Rarely does it take your mind to lovely things, if ever. And that's just news articles. What about all the other things that we allow ourselves to look at? Do they fit? Or don't they? Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. Isn't it really amazing? It was to me. It was really amazing to see how much the Bible actually says about how to use technology. Because these are verses that talk about how to live, and technology is part of our lives, and we need to learn to obey what's here. If ye then be risen with Christ, seek those things which are above, where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 21 and 22. Prove all things, hold fast that which is good. Abstain from all appearance of evil. Probably should have backed up and took verse 19 with it as well. Quench not the spirit. Do we ever attempt to dull the spirit's voice by picking up a device and using the chemicals in our brain to make us feel better when we really should be listening to what God has to say to us? Just a suggestion. Titus chapter 2, some principles here. Titus 2:11, for the grace of God that bringeth salvation hath appeared to all men, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, we should live soberly, righteously and godly in this present world, looking for that blessed hope and the glorious appearing of the great God and our Savior Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us, that he might redeem us from all iniquity and purify unto himself a peculiar people zealous of good works. I thought about reading that verse 13, and just doing something almost sacrilegious with it, and saying something like, looking for that latest Samsung Galaxy or iPhone or something like that. Because sometimes we really do focus so much on things on the earth. We're not really looking for that blessed hope. Our blessed hope is in the new device and in the fastest internet and the greatest. Or is it in Christ? Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5 is another principle I think should be brought out here. Hebrews 13:5, let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have, for he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. The point that I want to get here is that covetousness is not helped by the internet. It is designed to feed covetousness. And think about all the things that we buy online that we probably wouldn't buy if we had to get in our car and drive somewhere. I'm just suggesting that maybe we don't know how to have our lives be without covetousness, that we're rich enough to go ahead and feed it, and so we do, and the internet's right there to help us do it. And so we always have to have things that we think are going to make us feel good, look good, and so on and so forth. James 4, verses 6 through 11. But he giveth more grace, wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. Submit yourselves therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Be afflicted, mourn, and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning, and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. If we would apply all of these principles to technology, we probably wouldn't have needed to look at the other verses. What is it about technology that feeds humility? What is it about technology that helps us submit to God? What is it about technology that helps us resist the devil? What is it about technology that helps us cure ourselves from the tendency to be double-minded? What is it about technology that helps us mourn and weep? 2%? 0.5%? I'm not sure. 1 Peter chapter 4 . Some of these are repeating a little bit, but 1 Peter 4, 7, but the end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore sober and watch unto prayer. Not YouTube videos. First John chapter 1, verses 15 through 17. These verses are often used as a catch-all to everything that's in the world. And it's very important. And we might be guilty of wearing them out, but think about them again and try to make them fresh in your mind. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, I think that the better translation for this would be the love for the Father is not in him. The love of the Father sounds a little vague to me, so I like to put the word for in there. So, if any man love the world, the love for the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. The world passeth away, and the lust thereof. He that doeth the will of God abideth forever. In Revelation, you don't need to turn to these verses, I don't even have them all written down, but in the letters to the churches, Jesus finishes up by saying, he that overcometh, he that overcometh, he that overcometh. And the point that I want to get from that is that we should never lose sight that there is a battle to be won. And technology comes right into that battle as well. If we think that we're done fighting, we've lost. If we're not fighting, we've given in. There is a battle to be fought, and it needs to be fought hard on this subject. I'm not done yet. I want to talk about some very practical things that I believe. Okay, some of the things that sociologists and psychologists are concerned about, I'm not terribly concerned about, because I feel like we've sort of been able to distance ourselves from it. However, we are plain people, and traditionally we have shunned things rather than trying to tame the beast. That's traditionally what we've done. I'm not here to say whether we have done the right thing or not, although it looks to me like even people that have gotten together and said that they are not going to accept internet and smartphones still end up using internet and smartphones in some fashion. And so it looks to me like that's an inconsistent place to be. Now, I'm sure there's some groups that would prove me wrong. But I am glad that at least we're able to talk about it, and at least you haven't thrown me out of the pulpit yet. But I am about to say some things that at Kirkwood I can say that I don't know if y'all do these things, but here I can't say that. Because I know you do. Can I keep going? The things that concern me in my life and in the lives of people that I observe is that we do not know how to have a deep, patient relationship with God. Technology teaches us that we can have instant answers anytime we need them. We can do everything that we need to do right away. Did you know God is not like that? God rarely answers the prayer the first time we ask. Very rarely. That's my experience. God says through the psalmist, "Be still and know that I am God. Sit still and be quiet." When's the last time you did that? And I'm going to suggest to you that sitting still with a phone in front of you is not being quiet, because you're still taking things in. There's no meditation. Hebrews says that God is the rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. This is not something that you sit down and type a query into a search box. God doesn't do that. In Elijah's case, he spoke in a still small voice. There was a lot of racket, a lot of big things happening, but God wasn't there. There's a big old internet out there. There's a lot of data. There's a lot of things that we can do, but God's not in it. I want us to get a grip on that. Matthew tells us that we need to ask, seek, and knock. Another place in Luke says that we are to watch and pray. All of these things tell me that a relationship, a real relationship with God, not one that you stand up and talk about at council meeting, I'm talking about a real relationship with God, is not one that happens through your smartphone, and it will not happen immediately. It is something that you grow into, and it will only happen when we are diligent in growing and when we make conscious effort to pursue God. If we want to run away from Him, He will let us do that. And we can sit there all day long and say that we have a relationship with God, but unless our lives are proving that we know how to live out these principles that we looked at, and unless we know what it is to get answers to fervent prayers that we pray over and over again, we have no business claiming a relationship with God, period. Obedience to His word is what is the real proof, not a testimony. I'm concerned about us plain people in the area of relationships with other people. We are designed to be with other people. God created us that way. We have social structure. We have homes and marriages. We have church. We have community. I guess people can live as hermits for years and years. but we would say they're not normal. Okay, to be socially acceptable and to be socially well-adjusted, we need to spend our time around people and have meaningful interactions with people. I'm concerned that we have fallen into the belief that relationships that are far away are better and more important than the ones close by. God has built Darby Mennonite Church. I don't know if you thought you chose to come here or not, but I dare say that God was working somehow in your life to make you end up here. And he built this congregation. And these are the people that we are, that are the most important, next to our family. Do we actually believe this? It's troubling to me when I find out from somebody in Pennsylvania about a need in my congregation. Now, that might be my fault, but it might also be the fault of whoever it is that has the need because they didn't share it with the people that are closest. I don't know everything that goes on in your life. You don't know everything that goes on in my life. And the only way we're going to find it out is if we're willing to open up our mouths and talk about it. But I think that my friend in Pennsylvania is going to help the problem better than y'all. And that is false. All he can do is, if I spin the story right, is agree with me. It's not helpful. I'm concerned about impure relationships. I don't know if we have issues with that here at Darbin or not, but there's a reason that our accountability sheet asks about who you've texted. Because remember that it's very easy to cross boundaries through digital media that you would never cross in real life. And it's real. And I'm concerned that we understand that. Studies have shown that we can only have a meaningful relationship with about 150 people. And whenever I talk about a meaningful relationship, I'm talking about the kind of relationship where you know the person, and if you're sitting with people at lunch, you would invite them to join you. You can only do that with about 150 people. And if we believe that the relationship that we have through WhatsApp with somebody we went to Bible school one time is meaningful, more meaningful than the one of the people sitting on the bench next to you in this congregation, I suggest you're deceived. They're not that meaningful. Oh, it's nice to know a lot of people. It makes you feel important. But real human relationships are important too. One of the other concerns that I have about this whole thing of technology and relationships among people is the exclusiveness that happens. So you want to have a group of people that get together and they make plans to do things. So what do? You just create a chat group and you exclude all the uncool people. And so you go ahead and make your plans with the cool people. Can I use those terms? I don't know what else you use. Popular might be a better word. Popular. And so we exclude all of the people that are a little weird or whatever. You just block people if you don't want them to see your posts or whatever. And in a way, that's okay. But in another way, it makes people wonder just where they fit in. One of the other things that can happen is, well, maybe I'm jumping into something else. I'm not sure if I am or not. Kind of lost place in my notes here. But I'll just include it right here. One of the things that I am a little concerned about when it comes to this whole exclusivity thing is the pressure that it puts on people to have the five apps. Because if you don't have WhatsApp, well, then you're going to miss out. If you don't have the next one, whatever it is, well, then you're going to miss out on that group. is there any way we can help that issue? Is there anything wrong with making plans far enough in advance that you don't have to rely on that? That you could make your plans far enough in advance that you could ask people here at church whether it suits them next Friday night? See, one of the things I didn't mention is that with this technology, we don't plan ahead. If we forget something on the road, we just send a text to the person and tell them we forgot it or whatever. Another concern that I have is the whole issue of a fantasy world. I've been kind of alluding to that. I believe that we are not free from this. Now, the big concern of this is on the online forums, such as Facebook and some of those, where you create a profile and you only post things that show what a important life you have and what a fun life you have. You never post things that don't portray you in a good light. And so you feel like you have to keep that up. And one of the reasons we do that is because it actually makes us think that we're important. I mean, look at this. After all, I have a Facebook feed that doesn't quit, and it's all good stuff. Funny birthday cakes, and, you know, fun times with the family. We never take a video of the time that we come unhinged and yell at the children and post that. And so we're creating a world, a fantasy world, and not only do we do it, but everybody else does it. And so it feeds this whole thing of this fantasy that never exists. It's not real. And I'm afraid that we might do the same thing with WhatsApp statuses. It is a miniature Facebook. You know Facebook owns that app, right? And I'm just waiting for the day that they're going to require a Facebook account to have WhatsApp. Then what are we going to do? Are we going to go get an account so we can keep our WhatsApp? I hope we're wise enough not to do that. I am so glad that we have formally taken a stand on Facebook, even though I realize that that doesn't guarantee that not everybody has Facebook. Okay? I'm not naive enough to believe that. Fantasy world has a really dark side to it as well. And this can come out in the form of illicit relationships between boys and girls, or even between girls and girls and boys and boys. It can also come out in the whole thing of looking at pornography, watching romantic movies, and, you know, whatever we turn to feed the fantasy, I'm concerned about, because fantasy isn't real life. And fantasies can never be lived out, ever. They just don't exist. And that's actually why industries like pornography keep thriving, because the people that are addicted to it and think that that's true keep chasing the fantasy. It's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It does not exist. Fourth thing that I'm concerned about is that I believe that technology, especially with the advent of WhatsApp status, and you know by now that I don't care for WhatsApp status. I get cross at them because of what people post, and I get cross at me because I can't resist looking at them. And I don't know what to do about that. There's about two groups on WhatsApp that I use it for that I'm not sure if I deleted the app what I would do. See, there you go back to that pressure people put on each other. You get the feeling by now that I'm mentally wrestling with a lot of things, and that's exactly true. I don't know what to do with it all. But anyway, the thing that concerns me, especially with this whole thing of WhatsApp statuses and other forms of sharing media, whether it's Snapchat or whatever it is that you all have, I want you to know that as soon as you post something, it is public. As soon as you post something, it is public. And that means that if we have a rule that says you shall not wear t-shirts, and you take a picture of yourselves wearing t-shirts and you put them on WhatsApp, you have just violated our principles and standards, because you are wearing t-shirts in public. Same goes for you all, whatever it is. Is that too blunt? I think it's real. I have seen things on WhatsApp statuses that if those people, if I were in their house, they would not come out of the bedroom with it on. So why is it okay to put it on WhatsApp status? I don't get it. Use your head. That was pretty harsh, wasn't it? But it really bothers me. You should never post pictures of swimming parties. I kind of question swimming parties, but anyway. Another thing that it feeds, I believe, is the whole narcissism, that we think we are the most important people in the world. Ask yourself, how many texts or messages do you send just to get a reply? Just to prove that you do have 100 friends. You ever do that? How many selfies do you take? How many images of your cars and trucks and I don't know what y'all post pictures of that feeds your narcissism? Why are these pictures always taken? I shouldn't say it quite like that. Why do they tend to be taken in a way that makes me or the truck or the car or the thing look just its best? Why? Why aren't they dirty when we take the picture? It goes back to the fantasy world. It goes back to the thing of creating something that we want everybody to believe. And you may deny that, but I want you to analyze it and see if it's not so. Along with that is, of course, idolatry. We worship the things that we spend the most time on. We have taken a stand on Hollywood movies, and I'm thankful that we have, but one of the things that we've done in our official position is said that it's okay to allow people to watch videos for specific use training and for instructional purposes. Videos are very helpful because you're learning by seeing and by hearing at the same time, and you can see how a person does just what you need to do. I have used it for that many, many times. But I'm going to suggest to you that watching Andy Griffith is not a history lesson. But I've heard that. That is just ridiculous. And one of the things that I want us to learn is that watching video format conditions us to accepting Hollywood movies. Once you get used to the video format, it's not that big of a step into watching violence and worse. Another thing that I believe is happening, I've been building up to it, and it's just, I'm going to state it explicitly now, and that is that I believe we are blurring the lines of separation from the world. See, there's a reason that our youngsters grow up believing that somehow the radio is sin. Now, I don't think any mature Christian adult would say that it's sin to listen to the radio. I don't think we would. But because we've drawn such a hard line on it in the Pilgrim Conference, our children grow up believing that it's sin to do it. But they are not going to grow up believing that the internet is sin. And I'm going to suggest to you that there's far more sin available on the internet, even the stuff that your filters will let through. I'd almost rather have radio. Can I say that? If I had to choose between the two, I almost would rather have it. We are not as separate as we think we are. You look very separate here this morning, and I appreciate that. I said you look separate, and that's exactly what I mean. But if we can quote the statistics of the latest ball team, if we know everything there is to know about the latest royal wedding, if we know everything that there is to know about the latest technology, if we know everything that there is to know about celebrities, we are not separate from the world. Because you could go to your neighbor and hold a sustained conversation on that very same topic, and you would be able to talk intelligently about it. And I'm going to suggest that we would not be able to do that without the help of the internet. Once the gate is down, it's down. And you can cross over it a whole lot more freely than the first time. These are concerns that I have. The next thing that I think that we're flunking, especially in the older groups, is that we are not being very good examples. Now, I don't know that I can say that with great confidence here about people at Darbin. And so I commend you for that, you older men, with your phone usage. I'm going to commend you because I don't know that what I'm going to say applies. But I have seen 60-year-old men who are on their phones so much, and I just wonder what they would say about a teenager doing exactly what they do on their phones. And that troubles me. I guess once you're 50 that you're so important you have to be on your phone, but whenever you're a teenager, then you don't have a reason to be. And there's some truth to that. There's a small, tiny little bit of truth to that. But I want us older ones to remember that if we are using our phones, we need to be okay with a teenager doing exactly the same thing with their phone. Same apps, the same browsing history, same amount of time. It all needs to be okay. The old saying is, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, right? And so if we can't lead by example in this, it's a lost cause. Only time will tell whether we can stand this or not. I'm going to suggest two things that we could do better at. I think we would do ourselves a favor if we would detox a little bit. Take a break from the phone or the computer. Go on a walk and don't take your phone. It's actually okay to see something pretty and not take a picture of it. You don't have to. Next time you want to make an appointment with someone, make it a point to do it face to face rather than through text. See if we can actually do that. That's going to require planning ahead. And then when you do make the appointment, say you want to go out to lunch with them or something, do it face-to-face and then leave your phone in the car. Will you actually be able to talk to the person without help from your phone? These are some tests that I would like us to try to start using. Be accountable with your usage. Even more, if need be, more than the paper that we hand out. Delete apps, whatever it takes. And then another thing that I think we need to be real with is that we need a safe place to confess and work through these issues. Now, when I say that we need a safe place, I am not suggesting that we lower our standard. In other words, we should never accept sin, period. Okay, so if someone is sinning with their internet use or their device or whatever, what I want to see is a place that it is safe to come and talk about it, whether it's parents in the home, whether it's ministry in the church, whatever, that we understand that this is a dangerous place to be and we want to help each other through it. There is too many times too much stigma, negative stigma, put on people who have failed in this area. And I don't want to be part of that. I would like to turn that around and to make it more of a thing that we're here to help each other. We're not here to punish each other. And I want to try to do that. And y'all are going to have to help me do that. Because it's real. It's a reality. We don't want to force people into hypocrisy. We want to be real with where we're at. And if it's ugly, then we help people get through those things instead of just shunning them and pushing them away. In conclusion, remember that the world of technology is not neutral. It will take us somewhere, and I do not know yet where it's going to take us. I'm not a prophet. But I'm a little nervous because we have never tried something like this before, and we have not proven yet if it works. It's only been since 1991 that the internet was even invented, let alone the issues that I'm talking about. That's much later. We're going to need to do more seeking the things that are above, not less. We're going to need to do more of the discipline and accountability, not less. We're going to need more real relationships than we ever have, not less. And I want us to finally remember that this technology thing is in the hands of the world. We can use it. Yes, there's good religious websites out there. There's good podcasts. There's, you know, you name it. There's good things out there. But if you were to try to divide it into percentages, I don't know what it would be. But it is in the hands of the devil at this point. And I believe it will always stay there. And so we need to be extremely careful. Walk circumspectly. Let's kneel for prayer.